case 2194 first. And we'll go back up to the top, do 2120. Go back down to 2193, do that third. Then we'll go back to the top and work our way down. It is 8:30. Call this meeting to order. Please turn off or mute your electronic devices. We have Ms. Frost and Dr. Heinrich with us on the phone, our board members. And Victoria, would you please give the roll call?
Dr. Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Krager?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. Heinrich?
Here.
Dr. James?
Here.
Mr. Lohe?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Wright? Is absent. You have quorum.
Thank you. All right, so we'll start off with initial investigative reviews. As I said, the order, we'll start off with case number 2194. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes. Case 2194, the complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The respondent is Ruth A. Campbell, DVM. On December 31st, 2020, the board office received allegations regarding respondent's conduct with respect to hospital policies and procedures, as well as animal treatment. Complainant was a former employee of respondent's premises. On February 19th, 2021, the board voted to open an investigation. And this matter did not go in front of the investigative committee. It was brought back directly to you for review.
Thank you. And we do have the respondent here today. Would you care to address the board? Thank you for being here today. Would you please state your name for the record?
Ruthie Campbell.
Thank you. And I give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay, thank you. I'm Ann Campbell, veterinarian owner of Plaza Pet Clinic, and these wonderful folks came with me to support me silently in the truth. They are as appalled by Holly's accusations as I was, and were the people involved in the actual situations that Holly described so inaccurately. They're also aware that I am not very good at tooting my own horn, and I rose when the application for vet school required an autobiography. I found myself able to write it only from the viewpoint of one of my little bit cats. So I'm not good at this, but to give a little framework, I was an intensive care respiratory therapist and teaching hospitals for years, and saw many small actions that turned out to be miraculous and others that turned out to be unintentional tragedies. I'm acutely aware of the consequences of my actions and those of my staff. Kim back here was referred by Judy there to my clinic. Kim's dog was very ill and painful, and she wanted a house call euthanasia. Judy contacted me about it, and then Kim came down to the clinic, made the appointment for the dog. We couldn't get the house call euthanasia in that day. So we made the appointment for the next day. I gave her some Tramadol, sold her some Tramadol. It was logged in the books by Jess. And all of this bit about her being unknown, she came to the clinic, all of her information was put in the computer by Jess, by protocol. She logged in, logged it all into the log as with her initials. And it might be that the fact that Holly was actually a receptionist and not a technician, that she didn't understand the protocol for documenting drugs, but she had said she was a technician, and so we didn't realize her background was so limited, and just took care of the situation, and it was done appropriately. We went to Kim's house the next day and gave an extra couple. Russ and Justin Hefter are staff members, and they know that my vaccine protocols is what they are. We've had a hectic time, lots of people coming from other clinics because they can't get an appointment. And if we cannot get everything done, people are offered the options that I put up in my reply There's three or four options, one of which is to get the vaccine if they have something immediate that they have to have it for, come back for a free exam, and at a time when we can fit them in more appropriately. So Abby was kindly taken in by Lisa and her husband. She was a collapsing trachea dog, and the lady that owned her was unable to drive, and the dog had been coughing for 48 hours and was in bad shape. I gave her a racemic epinephrine treatment when they got her in, and she said she was wanted the dog euthanized because she couldn't take proper care of it. I told her that if she were willing to sign it over, that we'd find a home for her and I would treat her until we found a home. And Holly took great exception to that and had a huge rant because she thought she was going to be put upon to do extra work. That dog was subsequently adopted out to Lisa and her husband that evening. They, as you can tell, Lisa is medical personnel, so is her husband, and they are very good at taking care of these kind of animals, and the dog has been doing well there since. Joan actually wrote a letter because she was upset when I asked her if she thought I'd been abrupt with her because someone had said I was, and she said absolutely not, and she couldn't come, but she did write a letter that I think you received. Toby was an 8-month-old, 60-pound dog who came in because he couldn't get a timely appointment with their veterinarian, and he had an abscess jaw. He was ready for a rodeo. He wasn't mean. He was just an undisciplined young dog. And Russ and Jess helped me restrain him, and his airway was never compromised ever. And I was not screaming at the dog. That is just totally counterproductive, and that is the way to approach a dog in that situation. So, let's see. Loki. Loki came in and had a high glucose on his urine, so we wanted to get blood work, and the owner came back with the dog and was on the leash, and I explained to her that when the dog started growling, that he was sensing her tension. And so she chuckled and she said, "You should see how protective I am of my grandchildren." She handed me the leash. She went into the exam room and we got the plug without a problem. Holly was fired. She quit by text to Jess just before I contacted her. I think you've seen her. She also deleted her time card information from the computer, which we got Evermark to restore, and it's since been sent to you. So I guess I'm going to have to call on that cat, Kalua, to help me defending my right to have a veterinary practice. He would say she's an incredibly intuitive diagnostician with a broad medical background. Judy's cat, Goofy, came to my clinic from Southern Arizona Veterinary Specialists after having radioactive iodine and subsequent renal failure. Goofy was not doing it all well, and it became apparent to me that the renal failure was actually an emphysema crisis. I had seen humans be put on ventilators for it, and so I called Dr. Klein, and she said that didn't happen to cats. But I went ahead and treated him anyway, and he lived many years after that with normal values and did really well. And Dr. Klein then, a couple years later, called me and said, "You know, we found that cats below a certain level of thyroid don't do well, and you were probably absolutely right about Goofy." So I've helped, I think, research-wise, Dr. Klein, Dr. Dial, Dr. Schubitz. They've all thanked me for my contributions. I don't think I'm not helpful in the veterinary community. I've surrounded myself with good people, fortunately, including Galen and her husband, Hans, who, when I hospitalize animals at home, when they can't afford the specialty, they have been my tech team. They're neighbors of mine, and I could call them any hour of the night or day, or for an emergency on the weekend. Kuma would say that I'm a good Samaritan, and I'm incredibly respectful and kind with the animals, and that I have a huge heart, and he'd be right, he's been there for a long time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, we appreciate you being here today. We had no complainant, and Ms. Solomon, this is yours, isn't it? You believe?
No, it's mine.
Oh, sorry.
She's like,
Ms. Frost, sorry.
Yeah, so I recalled this initial complaint, and it was rather alarming. And so, you know, obviously opening a board case was, you know, the action that we agreed to take. Now, reading the respondent's response and all of the supporting documentation, definitely all of the support from a variety of people, not just the people working in the practice, but obviously people who clearly support Dr. Campbell. You can see a big gap, and I really appreciate all of the detail, and I feel terrible about the amount of stress this must have caused, you know, Dr. Campbell and the team really going through each incident that was outlined. I only came to one that I, you know, had a little bit of a, that caused me a little bit of pause, I think, are the options for the vaccinating and really, you know, vaccinating a pet without an exam, you know, probably should not be an option. I mean, owners can vaccinate their own pets, but if a pet is vaccinated, they should be examined. So other than that, though, I think that it's more than clear that this respondent contributes to the profession in a positive way. And, you know, unfortunately, you do get people that aren't a good fit, you know, for your team, or there's some sort of gap or mismatch there. So, you know, with all of that, I make a recommendation to dismiss with no violation.
I second that.
We have a motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 2194. Is there any further discussion? I guess I'd just like to say, I'd like to repeat what Ms. Frost said, that it is appalling that you had to go through this process. But that said, you know, normally on something like this, I think where it's so obvious that the one side is not telling the truth, that we don't always see people in person show up and talk to us. So the positive experience of this for me today is having a chance to meet you in person and see all your friends.
Yeah.
And reading all their testimonies to what you've done. And I guess the AG can chew me out if it's not appropriate, but I would say on behalf of the board, I apologize for putting you through this, and we appreciate everything you put into it in your response. Very professional, very informative, very thorough, and from all indications, exactly the way you do your practice. So we really appreciate that, appreciate you showing up, and really appreciate the support you see. We don't see this every day.
No.
So, thank you everybody that came up here to support Dr. Campbell. All right, the motion on the floor is to dismiss. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2194 is dismissed. Thank you all for being here today. Next up, we'll go back up to the top to case 2120. And Tracy, could you read us the summary, please?
Yes. Case 2120, the complainant is Jacoby A. Hamby, and the respondent is Kelly Collins, DVM. On August 8th, 2020, Lola, a 16-plus-year-old female chihuahua, was euthanized by a respondent. Complainant elected to have the dog individually cremated with ashes returned. The next day, complainant wanted to witness the cremation. A date and time was set up with the crematorium. On September 3rd, 2020, when complainant went to view the cremation of his dog, a cat was in the viewing room. After some research, it was determined that respondent mislabeled the dog and she was communally cremated 4 days earlier on August 31st, 2020. And last month, the board had pended this matter for further investigation, and it's now being brought back to you with the additional information requested. And the committee had concluded originally to dismiss this issue with no violation.
So we do have the, we do not have responded. Sole monitoring or statement?
Monitoring. The only thing that I want to state is that the additional materials we submitted to support the investigative committee's recommendation that be dismissed with no violation.
And the complainant, Mr. Hamby, did you want to address the board?
Yes, please.
Please come forward. Please state your name for the record.
Jacob Hamby.
And you get 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. Once again, my name is Jacob Hamby. I was here last month for the initial review. A little bit about me. I'm a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse for 16 years. I work in the electrophysiology department at Banner University. I'm a Navy lieutenant in the nurse corps. I'm trained in combat trauma, attached to a field medical hospital unit. So Lola was over 16 years old, almost 17. I had her whole life. She loved every person she came in contact with. True joy to be around, not your typical chihuahua. And after hearing this, you should understand why I'm so upset and infuriated at how we were both treated. Myself, I'm a very loyal and trusted person to people. I'm also a very forgiving person. But I just cannot find it myself to forgive what has happened. To recap from last hearing, Lola was nearing the end of her life when I got deployed with the Navy to help fight COVID. Obviously, I was devastated, thought of not being with her because I was her guy she was most attached to. Luckily, it was only gone for 3 months, and she gave me one more month to be with her before she passed. So I made a decision to help her pass comfortably. So I contacted Dr. Collins on August 8th, a Saturday, and she helped her pass and took her away, saying she's in good hands. It was the last time I saw her. Like you said, I initially paid for an unwitnessed single cremation because I couldn't bear the thought of seeing her go into the cremation oven. But the more I thought about it, the more I had to know I was bringing her home. So I emailed Palace Crematory the very next day, Sunday, August 9th, with a subject line, Lola Hamby, tan female chihuahua, to change it to a witnessed single cremation. Daniel Herriman responded Monday morning saying to call Palace to have all my questions answered. So not only did I call Palace 4 times that day to see if Lola had arrived, but I spoke to all 3 people working in the front office about her arriving safely. I called at 9:51 for 10 minutes, 10:54 for 3 minutes, 15:50 for 4 minutes. Then at 18:22, I left a message seeing if my dog Lola had arrived yet. Every time I called, I referred to her as my dog Lola. The same day, at 15:56, I texted Dr. Collins to see if Lola was picked up, to which she said yes. She trusted the guy Matt with her own little girl the year prior, and she was in good hands. I said, thanks for reassuring me. Lola was the best dog that could have ever came into my life. And I wanted to make sure ashes get back to my family and myself, safe and sound. Dr. Collins responded, I understand. Almost all dogs are special, but some just have that extra something. If at any point she was to realize her mistake in labeling Lola with Benji the cat, she euthanized the same day, this was it. The day of cremation comes, my family and I walk in a room for the service, and there's a cat in there. Obviously, my heart sank. I immediately knew what happened, but had little hope that she was still there. After waiting a little bit, we were informed that Lola was cremated with 24 other animals 3 days earlier. Now, what would every person have done if you were in my shoes? How would you have responded to your 4 and 6 year old kids not knowing how to console her father. Their confusion of where Lola was. Now, Pals has a lot to answer for in Lola's accidental cremation as well. I agree that Dr. Collins made an egregious error when she cut corners and labeling her daily euthanized animals. Instead of labeling the animals right then in the home, she waited to get home to perform this task from memory, to which I have no doubt that this was her normal routine. I have no doubt she has mislabeled animals before that hasn't been caught. I have no doubt that other pet owners have the wrong ashes sitting in her home right now due to these bad habits. I would have Benji the cat's ashes sitting in my house right now thinking they were Lola's if I had never changed the cremation to a witness one. What a simple thing to do, placing a name tag on an animal's paw, just as we do with humans in the hospital when they pass away. We place a toe tag on them immediately. Here's how many times the situation could have been caught. The email of Pals on Sunday, August 9th with the subject line Lola Hamby, tan female chihuahua. The text message to Dr. Collins on Monday, August 10th, talking about her dog passing and how all dogs are special, but some just have that extra something in them. Three times I called Pals on Monday, August 10th to see if my dog Lola had arrived, as well as a change of cremation to a single witness one. The message I left to Pals at 1822, checking to see if my dog Lola had arrived yet. The morning of Tuesday, August 11th, when Pals called me to tell me that Lola had arrived safely there. They obviously never checked the species of animal of Lola, nor followed up with my email with a specific subject line, nor my voicemail inquiring about my dog Lola. Friday, August 28th, I spoke to Pals for about 15 minutes about the cremation, the process, and everything in between. That's eight times that this mistake could have been caught between four people. Eight times. When Lola the cat arrived, don't you think that this would have triggered an eyebrow raise to investigate and double check this animal? This screams 100% without a doubt carelessness. This is just a job of these people who work at Pals. Where is the human factor? What do they do to calm the worried owner down, such as me who made multiple calls about their loved one? Why did they not care enough to take 5 extra minutes to verify Lola was there? A simple check would have caught this mislabeled event. Mr. Hammond, let me go verify we have Lola here. Mr. Hammond, we have Lola a cat, right? Error caught. Why in all that is holy does Pal's computer system not list the species of animal next to their name? All I ever got from people Pals when I called was, we have your baby here. Do they only check the species of the animal when they have two animals with the same name? According to Daniel, the manager there, this was the first time this has ever happened in 5 years he's been there. I asked him the same question, why the species of the animal isn't listed with a name? He had no valid response to this question. To me, this means this is not the first time this happened. And I'm sure I'm the first one to fight for my dog like this, or there would have been protocols in place, especially the species of animal next to their name in the system. Why were the communal cremations done before the witness ones? I was told by Dr. Collins that the witness cremations are performed first, just in case something like this happens, it can be caught. Why the deviation from this process? Why doesn't the crematory call the owner to verify the scheduled cremations days before the events? We all get calls from doctors and dentists before we come in and verify it and remind us. Where is the human factor with our beloved animals? I made a promise to Lola that she would always be with me. Dr. Collins and Pals took her from me with no regard whatsoever. To add insult to injury, Daniel, the manager of Pals, called me the same day after I left Pals with a scoop of ashes from a pile of 25 animals, including my 3.5-pound Lola. He wanted to know if I'd be interested in going to the ceremony at a park where they take the unclaimed ashes from the communal cremation that Lola was accidentally put with. Apparently, Pal sends these ashes somewhere to change the pH balance and mix them with flower seeds and plants them at a park. He said he would contact me with the time and date of the ceremony, this way to have some sense of peace knowing where she could be. I've never heard a peep from Pal since that phone call. This must be just a Lola, just a dog. Could you imagine uproar if this happened to a human? We'd all see the story on the news, the lawsuits would instantly ensue. And one final question to put out there, because I already know the answers. I've talked to multiple people who have had their beloved pets cremated. Do the owners know when they do a communal cremation at Pals they are getting a scoop of ashes from 25 animals that they were just throwing in a pile and put in an oven? Did the owner of Benji's Cat, whose label is Lola, know they were going to get a scoop of 25 ashes? Why do some crematories have dividers for each individual pet and a number tag when they are part of a community cremation? Once again, what is the HEART protocol? The investigational committee asked me what I meant when I said I wanted justice for Lola in my complaint letter. Justice for me would be to hold both Dr. Collins and Palace Crematory responsible equally, to punish both parties equally, otherwise nothing changes. The finger pointing and he said, she said has no ground to stand on. They're both careless and lackadaisical in documentation. Then I find out at the last hearing that Dr. Collins changed her story about Miss Lola and Lola. I have text messages from her boldly admitting to her error. Both parties had multiple chances to catch this error, didn't do the basics of their jobs. We as healthcare providers are all supposed to take care of the sick, the injured, the helpless, the dying, the deceased, the ones who can't talk for themselves, and the families, to the best of our ability with compassion, dignity, and respect. This did not happen with Lola. This did not happen to my family and myself. And this is what infuriates me. I just hope the board does what is right and just in this clear-cut matter, or all of this is for nothing.
Thank you. Ms. Frost, you have the lead on this.
Yes, thank you. I do have several questions outlined for Dr. Collins, and I wanted to actually, if it's okay, for staff a couple questions.
Go for it.
Okay. So looking at our administrative rules, when it comes to definitions of animal crematory minimum standards, so that's under R311-1001, it is outlined that, you know, communal cremation means cremains for multiple animals or in the cremation chamber without any form of separation or identification during the cremation process. And then it further does define individual cremation means the remains of the animals are separated and placed in a mapped location in the cremation chamber during the cremation procedure, which I also have been familiar with crematoriums that I've stored each number tag. And then private cremation means the remains of only one animal placed in the cremation chamber. My question for board staff, my first question, because the forms that I've utilized only in my experience do require that a species breed and weight are listed. And I did not see that completed. I did see what I believe to be those blanks on the forms that I reviewed that were submitted by PAL with, you know, Lola's name. So I guess my question first is there any sort of standard, and maybe I did not see it in our standard, in our administrative rules, but is there some sort of standard to identify and match the remains or the body with the submitted form?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Frost, members of the board, there is no administrative rule that requires that they record the species, first of all. They are required to record its weight. There are definitely requirements for them to track the animal from the time it accepts delivery of the animal until through the entire process. The burden has always been on the veterinary hospital to properly identify the animal. They, as you said, if they're expected to be communal, then they're not individually tagged, but they need to be weighed. In